You're listening to the CBA Podcast. CBA Podcast is brought to you by Chapman Basketball Academy. Your hosts are Terry Massey, Max Johansson, and Joe Chapman. All right, it's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
Spring break.
Yeah.
Everybody travel. You know, before I get going, before with all this traveling and all this driving, the United States needs to get an Autobahn lane where the minimum speed is 100 miles per hour, right? Because
yeah,
driving to and from Florida, I did it in 18 hours. I could have did it in 17, and then you got these semis that take five miles to pass.
Yes, yes.
It's like, really, you're going to knock 10 minutes out your time to...
Doesn't it feel like they do it on purpose, too? Oh. It's just like they side to side next to each other, and you're like, okay, why are you messing with me right now? Like, get over so I can get along with my business.
An Autobahn lane, 100 miles per hour, and then you got to get a card that says, I'm okay to drive in that lane.
Yeah, yeah. You need an auto bail, too, to get your ass out of jail.
I was following a BMW, and I seen he had a radar detector in, and he passed me up. I was doing 90, and he passed me. I'm like, all right, this is cool. I'll follow him for the next 10 miles.
Oh, right, right. You always pick that car until you're the car.
Yeah, yeah, and then you go all the way over to the right.
Get over. I was no lie. I'm coming back from Minnesota last year, and it's just me in the car, and I'm the guy that's setting the tone. I'm going 85, 90, and there's a person behind me for about 10 to 15 minutes. Every time I shift over a lane, they shift over a lane. Every time I go back to the left, they go back to the left. I'm like, why is this car messing with me right now? This happened until I just said, screw this. I'm getting off on the exit. And that, as I got off the exit, it was two kids, like 18, 19, just like, yeah. We're, it's like, damn. I'm thinking like, this is a serial killer. It's like, who the hell is this? Who does this? You know, it's raining too. I'm like, God, get the hell away from me.
My wife will be sleeping in the passenger seat. She'll look over and then she'll just close her eyes because I'm doing like 100 or something. It's
like, well, that's a nice wife. I mean, most people, wives or girlfriends, they trying to tell you how fast to go, how to slow down, what lane to get into.
I do that to her. Why are you going so slow?
Yeah, yeah.
You get so mad. All right, we're back at it. Kind of going to do a little bit of a season recap. Maybe talk a little bit of how the Final Four finished up and. You know, just talk about last season, finished up and stuff. So,
yeah.
God, the girls' game, man. What some fun basketball to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's got, you know, so many more viewership than the guys' game this year. NCAA, that's just, I think it was 18.7 million, and the boys were like 14.3. So that tells you where the game is going. And hopefully they get to the rules where they can start to make more money. You know, things of that nature. So we can get into that too. But yeah, that games was so impressive. We didn't get a chance to talk on air about that moving screen from UConn.
The charge heard around the world.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was like, is that a moving screen or not? Yes, it was a moving screen, people. But do you call that in the last minute of the game?
Well, Beckers has to catch a pretty hard pass and shoot it from the three.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
her post-game interview was unbelievable with it, too.
Yeah.
She didn't blame the refs at all. She said she could have done a bunch of different plays, so she handled that really, really well.
Yeah, she did. And, you know, Aaliyah was wide open, too. I mean, if they would have jumped Beckers for that shot, you would have had Aaliyah on that drop pass to tie the game. It was going
to
be
good. A shout-out to local KK with the game she had in that series.
Yeah.
Double digit scoring and
yeah,
she played really well.
She played really well throughout the year. They had a lot of injuries going on, but she played really well throughout the year. She caught her legs on the second half of the season. So that was kind of good to see. Now she got to stay out of foul trouble. Mm-hmm. So she can finish games off for that team, but her shot looked well. I remember her coming over in fifth or sixth grade and we just want to dial into her shot because she already was special with her ball handling and finishing and stuff like that. But you couldn't leave her open. She was starting to make big shots in the second half of the season. So it's just fun to see her game takes off. Ohio State with Hannah Bellinger, they made it. You know, that was a down year for Iowa State. A lot of people didn't think they were going to make it that far. So for them to get to, you know, play in a – and that was a good game that they played. They almost beat – did they lose to Stanford in the second round? But, man, who's that post player? Audrey something in the post?
On Stanford?
On Iowa State. She is a force to be reckoned with.
She's a freshman.
Freshman. Yeah, I mean, she's going to carry this girl's game.
When we were talking about post players not being an issue anymore, boy, they stepped up on the boys' side and the girls' side. You know, Cardoza, you know, Reese, and on the guys, Edie,
Klingham,
and then even what's that junior guy that was from South Carolina, the big guy.
Yeah, from North Carolina State.
DJ Burns.
It was so funny. DJ did an interview. He was like, I thought I was a big guy until I had to guard Edie.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It was just so funny when a lot of us as coaches are trying to transfer the game to, everyone can play on the outside until you got two bigs like that.
Yeah.
That changes the whole game when you can play inside out like that. I mean, the game is just so fun to watch when it's continued to play that way. So I thought UConn was going to be the team to beat all year, and they just had so many horsepowers.
Their ball movement was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
The way they're swinging the ball is.
Yeah, crazy. They didn't settle for shots. Like, they get late in a shot clock all the time because they didn't settle at all. 10 seconds left, they had their late game situation shots. They were fun to watch for any, you know, high school, college coaches that's out there, AAU coaches. Like, they run great sets, great actions. They know what they want to get to in different scenarios. So it was fun to watch.
Yeah. More girl, yeah, no inputs?
No, you said it all. That was good. I mean, heavy set, like, trying to – now this is like a Final Four thing that I see. Like, Twitter accounts or different people are like, how do we implement what UConn or what Purdue did with their people to their own personnel or, like, action and sets? Like,
right.
I don't think there's any high school team that can put in the amount of sets that Hurley did with UConn and, like, make it look the same. I think you can take, like, some concepts away and kind of, like, implement it into. Yep. But at the end of the day, I think that's kind of the funny part about, oh, we can run this set, we can run that set. But you have to have the right personnel and, like, teaching of it, too, when you're
– right.
One thing for UConn you got to say is swing the ball. Swing the ball, you know, or hit your post, kick it back out, swing the ball.
Yeah. Correct. And that's just the concepts that we're trying to teach on a daily basis to our kids is moving the ball, swinging the ball, but don't forget about the pinch post and the low post of getting them involved in the game.
Because they're busting their ass down there. You know?
They're doing all the dirty work, so we got to reward that by getting the ball inside a little bit more.
I was asking Max, going into this season, you guys already had a couple games on the boys' side, right?
Yes.
And you guys saw a shot clock, huh?
Yes.
How did that go? And
it wasn't bad, actually. I mean, I would say less than 5% of the games that we played actually affected us in a shot clock. I think it actually helped some of our players not be so east and west, more so getting downhill. So when you hear 8, 9... you know, 9, 8, 7, you're starting to think about getting the foot in the paint more. Some of our players, they like to, go east and west as opposed to attacking downhill. So it kind of helped us in those moments of having more people try to get paint touches and make the right passes. So it didn't really affect us as much as most people would have thought it would.
Yeah. And I think it just keeps, like, usually in an AAU game, if it's like a 15-point lead with 8 minutes left in the second half, it's like it doesn't feel like you can actually come back and have a chance, but your opponents have to play it out. They have to shoot. They can't hold it for a minute 30 at a time. So there's closer games and you're always like playing, it seems like, rather than just like, all right, we lost this one, like move on. But the games go longer and they get tighter.
Yeah, and then you get the coach better too. You don't get more timeouts per se because AAU, you always get 3 to 4, so it's not a lot. But you don't have to run and jump and trap everywhere when you're down 15, in the second half. We're down 15 to Iowa Barnstormers on Sunday in Rockford in the Puma tournament. And we were able to get into a 1-2-2, for 10 minutes of the second half. And we cut it down to 2 points because they had to learn how to play. And we had to, you know, get stops and rebound, and they couldn't hold the ball and just move the ball around or make someone just guard at half court and get out of our zone. So you're able to switch your defenses. You're able to get multiple people in the game and out of the game. As coaches, you're able to adjust, you know, to what's going on. So it's kind of fun to play that style.
At the tournament I was at this past weekend, parents are still out of hand. Guy got kicked out, sixth grade girls game, gets kicked out of the tournament.
Yeah.
And then he tries sneaking back in like two or three times. They ended up calling the police to escort him off the premises. I'm like, dude, this is sixth grade girls basketball your daughter's on.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
We have so many stories. I mean, it's been 2 weeks, 3 weeks since we started our season, and there's been 8 to 10 instances already that parents or coaches are out of control. Max was on the bench. Who did we play?
Darius Garland Elite.
Darius Garland Elite. We're up maybe 15, 20, and these guys made three threes in a row. Now, you know, when teams make shots, they do boom, and it's like whatever, you know. We're all good with that. But then the coach came in my face after the third made three. He came over in my coach's box. So he went past the scorer's table over in my coach's box and clapped in my face like, yeah, we got you clowns. I looked at the ref. I said, what's going on here? He didn't do anything. So as soon as he did that, I saw red. Now I was like, oh, it's go time. Like, all right, you literally forgot about the game that's going on. Now it's about, like, me and you right now. Like, you forgot there's a game that these kids are trying to win here. So our fans was ready. They got up ready to go. I was ready to go. My kids were ready to go. Max was stepping in. He was about ready to go. Coach LaChance was ready to go. Yes, the refs was ready to go. So there was probably four or five intentional fouls. There were two or three technical fouls in that game. And it all started with a younger coach who just got too hyped up in a game. And it got out of control, you know. So we got parents that got kicked out. It was just like, well, this could have been prevented, you know, number one, if that coach didn't do what he did. And number two, if the refs would have just tossed him out of the game. And so it was just a big experience. Like, oh, we're back. It was the first weekend, like the second or third game. I was like, wow, AAU season is back. And it hasn't stopped. I mean, there's instances where I've seen other parents get stopped after a game to talk to the coach about their parents, about their players' minutes. You know, and some of it's valid, some of it's not. And, you know, there's that 24-hour rule that we talked about in the first episode that I think is so important to have, because there's nothing good's going to come out of meeting with me or any other coach right after a game. I had parents call after a game, after we win, talk about minutes. I had parents, you know, after a loss that walk up to a coach to talk about minutes. It's just like, this is... You're messing with fire here, because what's going to come out of my mouth, if it might not be how I really feel right now. It might just be the spare of the moment. Like, dude, don't do that right now.
Yeah, talk to you right after a coach clapped in your face.
right. You know, like, and when that happened, all my parents was ready to go. They were like, yeah, let's.
Yeah, we got high fives.
Yeah, it's like that coach and that team deserved that. But, you know, this is the nature of the beast that we're dealing with AAU. It's not the prettiest. When we talk about transfer portal, it starts in AAU. You got people jumping team to team to team after the first weekend, second weekend, they got on different jerseys, and it's just a nightmare to deal with from the outside. I will say 95% of what we do here, we're pretty good, but there's still instances that happens with us. But, you know, just to see what other people are dealing with other clubs, it's just unbelievable.
I would say going back to the coaches, like, at least in our standpoint and like parent coaches interactions after games, most of our coaches are not the head coaches aren't connected to any of these players, like my family, like they're not volunteering, but it's not like their check is massive to travel to these tournaments and coach your kids two nights a week and then travel and hotels. Like, they're doing that stuff too to help your kid out. Now we may make mistakes. They may make mistakes. We may not play someone as much given a game, but it definitely doesn't come with like bad intention and like singling one person out. Like we can obviously always have those conversations on Monday, Tuesday, if we come at it with the right approach. But I just think that gets lost in the whole translation of this when it's just a coach that just wants to help kids out and coach basketball during the summer.
I think parents also get lost. They don't see all the X's and O's and the game, how the game is flowing. You know, why does coach have these five players in there? Well, there's a matchup that he's looking at, or, you know, they've seen something that this kid's not doing that this kid is in the game.
Right.
And all parents say is, why isn't my kid playing? Well, they didn't see him that he didn't box out and gave up three rebounds down below. Or
stem in practice habits, too. It doesn't even have to be in that game.
Like, correct.
They're not seeing what happens on Monday, Wednesday night.
Correct. And it's so early in the season. Yeah. You got to give time for adjustments. You know, it's a puzzle out there. You know, we're trying to put the best puzzle together at the moment of the game. And like Max said, practices, you don't see what's going on. So we're trying to, you know, put the pieces together. And that's just not us as coaches or at CBA. That's just the first couple of weeks of AAU. Like I said in the podcast, the first podcast, it takes 2 or 3 weeks before you determine who you need to put your arms around, who's going to be the knuckleheads, who parents you need to get in front of a lot more. It takes a minute for all of us to adjust. So that first tournament, we have so much expectations of winning everything, where you learn so much through the adversity of my top team right now, U17 goes to the league. We're 4-4. And it's perfect because we're learning what we need to do to get better, as opposed to peaking early. And then you come to these live periods and you come when coaches can watch you, and we're not playing the best basketball. So you want to go through this adversity now so you can be the better version of yourselves later in the season. And that goes for parents too. You know, this expectation that is, you know, I paid, so my kid needs to play. That's just not reality of what, not just basketball, but any sport or any life, you know, you go through is you don't pay just to have a better voice. If you're teaching your kids that, then that's unfortunate, because that's just not reality of life.
We talked, mentioned the transfer portal, and I saw somewhere that it ends in May 17th or something like that.
I think there's
still hundreds of kids in that transfer portal. So if you're in the transfer portal, right, after 2 years or a year of playing, did you not pick the right school to begin with? Or, you know, what is that decision? Why?
A couple things. I would say a lot of it at the highest level, depending on the kid's background, will probably be financially based.
Mm-hmm.
If you crush it somewhere and your financial background with your family isn't great, like, they're going to go try to get more money. That's number one. Number two, I think some of it is coaches mm-hmm. also being like, I can get someone better because my job's on the line here with the transfer portal. And then I think the third reason is they're getting terrible advice. Like mm-hmm. Alabama just made the Final Four. They have like 4 or 5 rotation guys transferring out.
Yeah.
So like, what's going on? What was the experience? Do they want more money?
Right.
You can go get more money. Are you going to get a better experience playing at a highest level with a really good coach? I'm not sure. So I think the money fogs a lot of what you were saying, like better fit, better coaching staff. Do I like it here? That money is fogging up like what college athletics used to be, which was, do I like the campus? Am I going to get my degree here? Is the coaching staff good? Do they care about their players? Is getting brushed over for the money part.
Right. And now these kids are on a year-to-year contract where, you know, it was 4 years. Now it's this year-to-year based on the player and based on the coach. I mean, I've talked to coaches where they say that some of their players are getting recruited during the season to go to other schools. And it's just unfortunate because you're as a coach, that's hard to do. That's like the NBA. You know, that's just hard to have an 18-year-old who has that much power that they're already got one foot out the door before you can even break that barrier of getting to know them and getting to know how to help them through that next step of life. They are already leaving, you know? So most of us who get to college still got a lot to learn. And you can't even get to that learning process because there's just so many people in your ear telling you, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to average this. You know, it's just, I hear so much, and it's just unfortunate that the way college basketball is going, they need to fix a lot of it. The NIL is number one, that, you know, that fifth year and automatic. You can go to any school automatically and play. They need to fix that too, because it's just messing the game up.
And the coach's job at that level now are completely different. They don't even develop. If you are a freshman going to a high level, like, if you don't perform right away, they'll get someone else. So, like, the development, the player development, the film sessions, the extra workouts, they're just not there anymore for those kids to develop. So they either got to go somewhere else and play if they want to develop, or stay there and probably get kicked off by one of those coaching staffs if you're not performing. And I think you see some of the different, like Marquette, and I'm a Wisconsin guy, so this takes a lot for me to say this too. Like, no one's leaving Marquette.
Yeah.
At that high level, everyone has money. Everyone's paying. Everyone has good NIL collectives. So the money will be there, but what are you doing outside of just your money and winning basketball games to, like, make your players want to stay there?
Right.
Connect, like, player development, extra skill sessions, being invested outside of just the money and basketball portion of it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Going back to the girls' side, so there's so many, you know, opportunities for the girls in college, pro, you know, going pro overseas, but the WNBA, there's very limited availability for them. And now we just seen talk about money. A rookie contract in the NBA is $10 million. Clinton Karch just signed a $338,000, you know, rookie contract, you know, and there's
first overall pick.
Yeah. Right.
So imagine the 30th.
But
right.
Speaking of the draft too, your minority order, former teammate Dwayne Wade had quite the draft down there in Chicago.
Illinois. Yeah, that's going to sell a lot of tickets.
Cardoza and Reese on the same team.
On the same team. I mean, your front line is set. And they got the guard who just signed with the Jordan brand. I forget her name, point guard. You know, they, like, Chicago is going to be good for a while. And the thing about the WNBA is the veterans play a long time. So you got ladies that are in there. High 30s, 40s, that's still playing at a high level. It's a hard league to crack, to get into. And to go back to that money part of it, you know, it's just very unfortunate that it, you know, Caitlin Clark makes that little of money. But so that collective bargain agreement that they got to come to has to be a lot better in a year from now. You're going to see ratings go through the roof.
I think you could even tell, like, the draft had like 5 million.
Yeah, million.
And the previous, like, highest rated one was like 600,000 when Diana Taurasi came out. Like,
right.
Completely different.
Yeah.
I think the WNBA needs to change their whole philosophy. First of all, they need to start running their season during basketball season.
Yeah. Well, because you got to think about it. Like, so, you know, the guys, their rookie contract can be up to, you know, like 10 million, like we said. Let's just say 10 million. You know, 4 years. What was Caitlin Clark like? $1 million in 4 years, you know, so there's a big difference. But you got to think, the WNBA, where everyone's on live land, she's only going to make $333,000 or something, right? But that's only 3 months. The season's only three months.
Right.
So we got to put that in perspective a little bit too. Like, they don't have like a NBA season where it's 8 months.
Right.
3 months to make $330,000 is unbelievable. But at the same time, they need to extend that to the guys, and they play 8 months. They should, our girls who are good enough shouldn't have to go overseas if they don't have to, because it's watering down their experience over there, because it's too many people and too many divisions.
I feel overseas. Like it should start right after March Madness, their season, and go to like early. I don't even want them to go into football season, really. But like,
I think it should be during the basketball season.
But then yeah, I do too.
I think it should be. Well, it should be November to.
It's Sunday. To it's Sunday Night Football. There's a WNBA game on.
Yes.
Okay. ESPN. Well, then maybe after football season, January to April or something. You know, during basketball season, because the girls have proven that on the college side,
totally,
that they can hang with the boys. I mean, they kick their butts rating wise during basketball season. So picture a Sunday. picture a Sunday in February. You got the Sparks playing at 5 o'clock, and then it's a doubleheader in LA at the stadium, and the Lakers are on at 7.
Right after.
And then the All Star game is you have the guys' All Star game, the girls' All Star game, and then you have the guys' All Star game.
Yeah.
And then you have these competitions like you saw Stefan, what's her name, do?
Yeah. Sabrina.
Yeah. You know, Sabrina do.
Yeah.
You know, the marketing, and it's all, a lot of the money comes from TV deals.
Yeah.
You know, multi-million TV deals with TNT. And
if they could end up with the WNBA finals like late July, early August, and end their season there.
Yeah. That's,
do the finals.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. I don't think that'd be terrible.
So after Super Bowl, like start it, you know,
and then before football starts again.
Yep.
Is the finals.
Yep.
Because it's all about money. I mean, more people invest in the WNBA if it's all about money. So you start running your games with the NBA, piggybacking off their marketing.
Yeah.
You know, and more TV deals, and that increase your money.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I think the things you got to be wary of is, you know, the college girls game is taking off so good that you saw during this was the first year I thought I saw the first and second round being played at the same time as the boys. And we talked about in previous podcasts is you didn't know which one to watch because it was so many games going on at one time. It didn't hurt the girls' rating, that's all. Mm-hmm. And it didn't hurt the guys' rating. So to have it on the same weekends wasn't that bad, you know, for viewership, which I thought maybe it was going to be, you know, because usually it's 1 week boys, 1 week girls. But they did it all together, and I thought that was pretty cool to see that. So, you know, going back to that, if the WNBA was playing during the same time as college girls basketball, how better would that experience be? Because you don't have that, you know, now. You know, but then when do you do the draft? Like, you got to start to think about how do you, you know, which is easy to do if someone did it all day to put the pieces to the puzzle. But the girls' game is taking off so much, people should try to make it just as good as the guys' game.
In the college, I mean, you got stars that are still going to be playing next year. I mean, I think Paige Becker is going to be better next year than this year because she had two injuries.
Yeah.
This was her first season, you know, coming back from an injury, you know. You still got Juju Watkins coming up, you know, and it's going to just go up, you know. And we're creatures of habit. So we watch basketball during basketball season, you know. We're creatures of habit. We're going to watch basketball games. Like, and if you love basketball.
It doesn't matter. The ratings for the WNBA are never going to reach the NFL's too. So it's like, why even bother about like comparing or when they're going to play? Like, you're probably not getting a football fan to watch the WNBA anyways.
So right.
It's probably not the demographic.
Yeah. And then a lot of our, to go back to our AAU, so a lot of our girls start, you know, this weekend with the USJN, and some started last weekend. And Coach Max got his first chance to coach a girls team.
Loved it.
Tell us about that. Tell us about your first experience coaching girls.
It's definitely different. Just like the coaching style, the how you prepare for, but I think they're all, it just seems like they're more connected and on the same page with it. Our girls play just like they run the same stuff our guys programs do.
Yep.
Probably play harder defensively and share the ball three times as well. So it was really fun to watch. High level throughout the state too, like Let It Rain.
Yeah.
The Lakers, the Aces, like the Wisconsin girls basketball is really good. There was a lot of high level talent there.
Yeah. It's so fun to watch the difference of style of play from the girls game to the guys game. And, you know, our girls are so scrappy and tough and disciplined, and they move the ball. They share the ball. They're actually genuinely happy for each other's success. They're not pouting or moody or egos getting in the way of who's starting, who's not. They actually love being around each other. And that's the camaraderie that girls basketball have. That I call it like that volleyball type of feel. Like, you know, when you get a point in volleyball, how they come back to the middle and, you know, they're all happy as hell. Yeah, let's go. That's only 1 point. But, you know, that's what the game is doing now in girls basketball. So it's just so fun to see, you know, all of our teams are, you know, starting practices now, starting to get in their groove. Every team is starting in our division practicing. So just to see, you know, the game starting to take off a little bit. poked my head into, you know, Tim Franks and McNabb and, you know, those guys had practice with their U9 team. and Carter Pravat and AJ Willard, they all coaching together. So all these guys that we had for 6-7 years, they're calling us at night, coming up with a practice plan. They're doing bear crawl suicides.
Text us about a parent waiver after the first practice.
Where do we get this? You know, can we do charge drills? Can we run our motion
what
that
grade
we
is
ran?
It? What grade
this
is
U9.
They put in 5 out.
They put in our 5 out, dribble handoffs, the ball screens. And, you know, the kids are loving it. And the parents are like, this is unbelievable. You know, having these guys coach our kids.
Usually U9, you got to run 4 across.
Right. As long as they go towards the right basket.
So just to, you know, how the game is, we're pushing the game forward with the guys that, and girls that started with us, with Gracie McNabb and, you know, Sarah A. and Taylor Ignatowski, all these girls that's coming back and coaching for us. You know, your daughters are coaching as well. So we're paying the game back with the girls that's and the guys that's been here with us. So it's cool to find their setting. You know, we got one of our girl coaches who coached your daughter, Lauren Downs.
Yep.
She's going to be an unbelievable coach one day.
Lauren.
She put up
30 in a league game on Sunday. it was cool. So my daughter, my two daughters, and Lauren and Gracie,
yes, yep.
play
yep.
together in a rec league.
Yep.
And there was also an undercover player that I can't mention played with them. They went up against UWM alum, and
right.
I think one still plays. And the other team put up 90, but we put up 50 something. I think Maya had 12 points. Maddie had 10 points,
there
but Lauren put up 30, and she was knocking threes down from the logo.
Wow.
She was Caitlin Clark that game. It was pretty fun to watch. It was pretty cool.
And I was telling her, you know, I've known Lauren for probably 6, 7, 8 years now when she was at West Bend. West, when she played, I used to come and do individuals with their team and team takeovers. So to see the transition of going to college, playing at Lakeland, graduating, playing there, then coming back coaching, and you see the transition of these young athletes from 16, 15 to 23, 24, of the discipline and structure that they learn through the game and how that's carrying over into their everyday life. It's just so fun to see that transition.
Plus to be mentors. To the girls too, you know, because they know what it's about. And,
right.
You know, so.
Right. And so it's just fun to see that, you know, our season's about to take off on the girls' side as well. So it's just amazing to see the growth of CBA. Amazing to see how many girls we got playing the sport. And we got some talented players. And that always helps too, just to see the third grader, fourth grader, you know, looking up to the U17 player, and they be in the same gym and they know each other's name and high five and, you know, do a workout alongside each other. I think it's a pretty cool environment that we've set here.
How do you, as a director, how did you pick like what circuit to go on and stuff? Or do they call you or do you got to apply and pick you because how good you were the season before?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. You got to continue to push the envelope of what's out there. And you got to continue to play well on different circuits. For instance, that Select 40, the last 2 to 3 years has been an unbelievable circuit. First time we heard about it was through the Lakers. They played it 3-4 years ago. And you always want to see who's trending where and what they're doing, especially the successful programs in the state, like Max mentioned. So the Lakers, you got Impact, you got Purple Aces, you got Let It Rain. You got the Legends. So Wisconsin Blaze, you just got a lot of people doing a lot of different things. So you want to stay, you know, with what they're doing. Like Wisconsin Shooters is another one that, you know, you got to go on these circuits and play well. And if they like you, they'll bring you back and tell you about their circuits and what they can offer you as a program. With our Puma deal, they started their girl side this year. So they're going to have 2 or 3 events that we go to, and next year might be 4 or 5 events. We're doing our Select 40. We do our USJN. We do our North Tardon. North Tardon is obviously really big program in Minnesota.
The competition up there.
It's amazing. Minnesota girls basketball is unbelievable. Boys, too. But girls basketball is unbelievable. Their high schools are great. We go there every year, at least once or twice a year.
Yeah, their high schools are college campuses.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's crazy there. So we stick to those. And obviously you do your Tournament of Champions in Chicago, just the big ones like that. You get to Louisville and do the run for the Roses.
That's a fun one.
That's a fun one. And Louisville's an amazing city to be in for any tournament. So you kind of stick to what the waves are because you don't want to take away from any guy or girl the big trips, you know, because as you get older, when I play, you knew when a U16 player, they're going to run for the Roses or in Chicago to play in a McCormick place. So, you know, those big tournaments. So you're looking forward to it every year. At least I know I'm going there as I get older. So you shoot for it, and that's no different there. So you got to perform well on these tournaments, but you also have to continue to put your envelope and do a little bit more here and there too.
Where was the tournament that you had the shot clock? Was that here locally?
We had NY2LA is now doing a shot clock for all their tournaments for their circuit, and most of the shoe circuits have shot clocks. So
what school were you in for that one? With the
Homestead. So they had like little portable ones, probably about like shoulder height for me in each corner of the shot clock. And then Puma had theirs on
it was on the floor too.
It was on the floor too. Yeah. There's one elevated and one lower.
Correct. Yep. And some floors had it on, you know, regular up top of the scoreboard, but some had it on the floor. It's just the hard part of that is I like the shot clock. I think every tournament you need a third person running it instead of the scorer's table and a score person who's doing a game clock, also doing the shot clock. I think you need two separate things. And then because sometimes the shot clock moves and the game clock moves, you know, at the same time. So if there's a malfunction and you didn't start the shot clock, now the game clock, you got to reset too. So it gets tricky. So if it's 20 seconds left and you forgot to reset the shot clock, but now you got to take 10 seconds off the game clock to reset it because it's on two different things. So that's one of the times the things that you can relay that to the, you know, the directors, like, all right, this is, some of the things that you can do better here. And what I like is a lot of these places are listening to advice because everyone wants the shot clock. I think the game needs to evolve into that. So for people to go out on a limb and start doing it, that's the first step. And it's going to be little things that we all can fix. But the first step is actually getting it.
Well, they said money's an issue. Like, I want to know how much, so where the scorekeepers sit, how much is it to get that video of the players on there and stuff like that? You know, they're spending money on that kind of stuff, but not a shot clock.
The most expensive thing would just be getting the actual shot clock place. What's the scorekeeper? You hire another scorekeeper and you pay him $30 a game for the 2 hours? I don't know. Right. Just press one button and do it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I just think there's so much more.
That it can't be more than $5,000.
Right? No, it can't be.
Well, how much are those little things that
the portable ones,
the portable score boxes,
$80 to $100. I mean,
and you don't even need to get a new score box. No, like all those score things, you just have another, like at colleges, you just have another, there's a shot clock outlet there and it's just an extra little.
But what I'm saying is the screen itself can't be any more than one of those portable score things that you have on the table.
Totally. Yes. Yes.
Totally. Yeah.
And to hang it above a backboard. Yeah, you got all these referendums where they're putting in, you know, stadium seating in the lunchroom.
Right.
You know,
right.
You can't put a shot clock above your backboard.
Yeah. Some of the,
it's crazy.
There's some of the Division III and Division II colleges, like they have worse weight rooms and facilities than these high schools have.
You go to Cedarburg, they got a stadium seating with like pillows, and it's like put a shot clock in. That kid can sit on the freaking picnic table.
Yeah, and I also think like this, like for Homestead, for instance, they don't have records, you know, like showing records. You know, I think like every school should have. That's the cool part. For any kid walking through as a ninth grader, 10th grader, to show the records of who's the highest scorer, who's the all-time leading scorer, who's the most winningest person in a program, like little things like that. You kind of want to show, you know.
Oh, when I go in, I like oh, where's the trophy?
Right, I'm just right. Stupid. I think everybody wants to see that, you know, yeah. and measure themselves and what to get to. So I think that's another thing in high school. You got to have that, you know, for your kids. I think it's important for anyone.
I think it's just like for your program in general, not even yeah. for it's just like to show what your program has accomplished.
Yeah. You know, I think that's something the game has got to continue to move forward. And we can talk hours on that. We still going to get our Marquette boys on here at some point. You know, we did finish off.
Those guys are always hard to get.
I know.
Yeah. TJ Nolan, Cade, they're always doing something.
It's good to see Nolan. Nolan's in here working out now and. We got an individual with him today and just working on his game, getting his body growing. Oh, Con is in here every day. And some of the guys, Jack Doherty and some of these guys, it's just in here working. You know, that's just that discipline and structure that carried them through to where they are now. It just doesn't stop just because the season's over. You know, the McNabs, the Franks, and all these guys that are they're working because that's what they want to do. And that's just a part of the grind that it's been installed and instilled in them for, you know, 14, 15 years now.
So let's go a little higher level, Marquette. What happened to your Marquette?
But it's a make and miss league, you know, it really is. And it's happened to us twice so far in AAU where we just can't make a shot, you know. And I will say during that game in Marquette, they took the right shots majority of the time. They were giving them shots that they made all year. They just didn't make it. I think they went 4-for-30 or 4-for-31 from three that game. But I wouldn't say none of them was bad shots. You know, it's just like it's a when NBA players and college players say it's a make and miss league, it really is. And it really is contagious. If you play the game and you know your team has missed 8 shots in a row and you're the guy that's got the 9th shot and you're wide open, 9 times out of 10, you're going to miss that shot just because that's just the game is like that. It's contagious. And that's why I still feel like we had to get an inside presence in that game. We had to score to get some touches, get our rhythm back, you know, and we couldn't do that. You know, we had Joplin miss 3 free throws in a row to end the first half. Usually he makes those, you know, he's going to make 1 out of 3 to feel good about himself going into the second half. That's how you knew it was just a make or miss type of game.
Did Iguodaro like rely too much on that little floater shot in the middle?
Yeah, he did. I thought he could have done a little bit more on a low post, just to get us going, just to get us a touch. But again, that's just not how we played all year. So, to change the game just based on, you know, one half, you can't do that. You know, you got to ride the wave and hopefully you catch your legs. And there were times in that game we did, you know, when you made 1 or 2 more layups, you made 1 or 2 more threes, we're right there, you know, but we couldn't sustain, you know, the shot making because we, for the most part, we sustained the defense. We sustained the energy. We sustained the effort. We just couldn't sustain the shot making. And that's what it comes down to in a tournament. That's why you got to be so lucky to make it as far as we did as the Final Four and so lucky to win it. It takes luck. It takes coaching. It takes not being injured, you know, at the right time. It takes shot making. It takes a lot to win on a 1-game setting and not a best-of-7 setting, you know. So as much as we're down, they did better than they did last year. You know, that's the thing that as a coach and you go into a new environment and your starters didn't make it past the first weekend, well, they got to the second weekend, you know, and that's what I told Coach Shaka. Is like, I'm just proud of what you've done in 3 years at our program and what you're doing as a minority at a school like Marquette, of being a coach that carries himself the way that he does and to build a brand the right way of not people in a portal and different things like that. I mean, what he's done in 3 years at Marquette, it's been unbelievable. So, you know, to advance to the second weekend was the first time that he's done that here and the first time that group has done it. That was important, you know, more than winning the Big East this year, you know, getting to that second round because no one has done it there in that group. So I thought, you know, it was a really good year. Obviously, the fans are going to always be up and down. You know, it's fans are the fans. There's nothing you can do there. But I thought it was a really successful year.
Let's go a little higher level because you got the NBA playoffs starting, and it looks like the Bucks are going to be all without.
Do you think they tanked to play to Indy?
Yeah.
Yes.
The way they were playing, for sure.
But why would you tank to play someone that just wiped the floor with you in the regular season?
Playoffs will be different.
Yeah, well, but Giannis might not play this
that's
series.
That's why I'd rather play Indy because they don't have anyone inside. Otherwise, you have Embiid or Bam. Right. I don't want to see those.
You don't want to see. I think they really tanked. To not that when I say tank that last game,
they started out like they were killing them. Yes, they're like, oh, yes, back up,
yep, because they was playing so well, and then you can just tell like past halftime, it was just like, let's just chill out, guys.
And Stephen A. is like, oh, Dame hates it here and stuff, which you know he's
he
got
could.
Stuff.
I very well could.
So people are like, oh, Milwaukee's not you know the place to go, people. Milwaukee Bucks players don't live in Milwaukee. They live in the suburbs and send their kids to high-end schools.
Right,
and
then right.
They're
right.
only here during, and then they're in L.A. or right. Florida and or New York in the off-season.
Well, the summer is better.
Right.
Yeah.
Wisconsin summer is better than Florida summer.
Yeah.
It's better than California summer because it's not as humid.
It's, and it's better
it's
than
beautiful
Portland.
Out. And it's better than Portland.
And the thing with Dame is a couple things. He's going through a divorce. You know, he don't have his family here. Mm-hmm. In Portland, he had everyone, you know, his family, his mom, you know, his siblings. He's got everyone there. And here he just came by himself and he don't have his kids with him either. So, you know, that's a big adjustment for 11 years playing in, you know, one city. And now you got to come over without anyone. It's just you. So it's going to take time for a guy like that to adjust a new system, you know, injuries, you know, they haven't had their whole team all year.
Different coaches.
I mean, they really had three coaches.
Oh, and a whole different staff, too, right, now that Doc's there.
Plus, Middleton, Giannis, and Dame played the total, I think,
eight
games. And when they play together, they
score 140.
Right. It's ridiculous. So I will take a backseat on what you hear in the media. I mean, because they don't want to talk about people's personal life a lot on the media, but that plays a lot on the person's mind. I couldn't imagine going to another city without my wife and kids and a routine. He took his kids to school every day. He picked them up. And that takes a toll on you when you're that
They're
age.
They're humans first.
Yeah.
It gets lost.
It gets lost. So I wouldn't take it too much. I take it as a grain of salt a little bit. I think he's fine. I just think they need a whole year under Doc. They need a whole year being healthy. They need a whole year of understanding what's their top five, you know, players. Because some of their guys are getting older, like Brooke Lopez, things like that. They just got to determine which way they want to go.
I think they sell out next year. And the only two people that are not untouchable is Dame and Giannis.
Yeah.
They sell out
We're just super old and unathletic.
Yeah. And it's that time. And Giannis only signed a 3-year deal. So, and the third year was a optional player year. So you're going to have to bring it next year.
You think it's do or die? You think if Celtics don't win it all this year, they blow that team up?
No, they got too much money.
And they just signed everyone.
Yeah, they just signed everyone. Holiday, they just signed.
Yeah, blowing it up would be like, did Derek White sign?
Derek White signed.
Oh, I thought he didn't.
I think he came on a deal that was still pretty good, though, because this is only his second year there.
I'd bring him to Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah. I like Derek White.
Pritchard to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Anyone, really. Yeah. Sam Hauser.
Yeah, Hauser. He's going to make some money somewhere. He'll be a piece that they might have to let go if they don't win because they couldn't afford him. They just can't afford what he does right now. Is going to make, like Duncan Robinson made that 5-year, $90 million contract. That's what he's going to get somewhere. That's just so much money in the NBA.
Draft Bronny and then bring LeBron over on a 1-year.
Someone's gonna bait that. I mean, what LeBron did this year. To still average 25 points a game, 8 assists a game, 6-7 rebounds a game. At that age, is just unbelievable. He's not my best player ever, and he shouldn't be no one's. He is definitely.
I think he's third in my opinion.
Who do you have second?
Kobe. Yeah, I have Michael 1, Kobe 2.
I can't.
Michael and Kobe were the hardest working NBA players to ever play the game.
Yeah, Kobe was unbelievable. And it's still hard for me to talk about him in past tense, but what he was never the most athletic player. What he did for 20 years to elevate the game of basketball and to implement the best player ever and to take it a step further, he's on the plateau by himself in a lot of ways in my view.
Franchise.
With one franchise and didn't start as a franchise player. He came off the bench. So some of his stats are very skewed because he didn't play in the first couple of years. It was an old man's league back then. So he had to earn respect, you know, and Dale Harris, you know, some of these coaches didn't play rookies. So he had to earn his way up. So I like stories like that.
The reason why I put that, like, so Michael had Pippen, right? And that, who else? That's pretty much it. I mean, Kobe had Shaq, but LeBron had Bosh, Wade, Allen. Now he's got Davis. He had Kyrie.
Yeah. Kevin Love.
Early
LeBron Cavs teams were those teams were like 20-win teams if LeBron wasn't on them.
I agree.
And yes. He took them every single year to the finals.
Yeah, he took when they got to the Spurs and they beat that Detroit Pistons team and he scored like 23 crazy. Straight points.
No one else does that.
No one else does it. That's why I got LeBron really high on my list because his early years, he was a one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah.
And he made people around him better. Like Mo Williams, he was an all-star. Mm-hmm. And with the Cavs because LeBron was next to him making mm-hmm. him better. So he made people around him better. That's why I think he's in the top three or four because he just made people – everywhere he goes, he makes people around him better. As he's getting older, I think he needs to take a step back, you know, from averaging 25 to maybe 18 to 19 points a game and just be the facilitator, rebounder that he can be because he can – 1 year he averaged, you know, he led the league in assists when he was the Lakers – true point guard, so he can do it. You know, Anthony Davis got to be their best player in this postseason to win, to at least beat Denver.
What do you think about the talk with the record? Speaking of records, you know, Caitlin Clark breaking that record, and then you see, oh, he went and broke that record if there's a 3-point shot back when we played. You know, what do you think about that talk?
Well, it's a couple things to it. I think past generations are always going to talk about the next generation because of what we didn't have. You know, it's just the game is moving forward. There's TikToks and things about, you know, one guy's like, I'm done with the 80s. He's making these TikToks like, look at this move. I'm done with the 80s. Like, Jordan can't even dribble left. He dribbles right-handed going left. And he's just making all these comparisons. And there's valid points to the three-point line. Obviously, Pistol Pete will still be, you know, the record right now because, you know, he shot it from deep, you know, but it wasn't. So the game is evolving. So we got to evolve with the game. And so, you know, when people say that, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but also understand that every era is just a different game. Not to say the 80s, 90s players can't play in today's game and not saying today's players can't play in that generation of game. You adapt to whatever the game is and you kind of go from there. Will Steph Curry be just as effective in the 90s? Probably, but he would have to adjust to not taking 23s, you know, in a game. It probably would be 8, you know. So like Steve Novak was talking about, you just didn't shoot that much, you know, back then. So you have to adjust to a player like a Steph Curry to even allow him to get to that point. Does a coach even allow him to be Steph Curry in the 90s? So it's just, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I think it's just a weird conversation too, where like the past generations, whether they intend to, but it just seems like they're always bash the current players or like look down on the current players, how they're doing it. Like, oh, you couldn't play in this generation, couldn't play in that generation. Like, I think hockey is like the one sport where everyone kind of, because it hasn't changed a whole lot,
right?
Obviously, but they always like respect the players that came before them or after them and stuff like that. And like basketball in particular is the one where like every generation hates each other and thinks that they couldn't play when I played and they couldn't play now.
Right.
So it's always a weird dynamic with that, which is weird. I don't know if it's the money thing because how much money the NBA players are making now to when they were playing back in the day because that's the biggest difference.
Right.
But I don't know. It's just a weird dynamic, I think.
Yeah.
As we look forward here to this summer, what do you all got going on here with CBA? I see some kids putting in the extra work. You got camps coming up, training still going on.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. We got camps, training, individuals. You know, we got obviously our tournaments going on. You know, CBA is a machine at the moment. I mean, every day you can be in a gym with, you know, one of us working on your game. You'll go into another gym, you see a practice going on. You go to another gym, you see the shooting machine up, you know, working. You come into the office, you see people watching film. It's a machine right now, and that's what we always wanted. That's what we wanted to create in Southeast Wisconsin when we first retired. You know, that's something that I envisioned on doing, and it's just really taken off in year 7. You can see the benefits of CBA throughout the whole state. And I'm just so happy and proud of not just our program, but the state of Wisconsin has unbelievable basketball and great programs here. From the girl side to the guy side, it's just a nonstop machine. This Wisconsin is not considered one of the top places to play basketball, but I don't know many places like Wisconsin that's producing as many talent as we has on the guys and the girls side in the last 5 to 10 years.
When we a couple of podcasts back, we talked about the seniors you were losing. How are your boys top team and girls top team losing the, you know, lost Tim Franks, you know, one of the best shooters?
Yeah, me and Max talk about this, and a couple of my other coaches have texted me in the past. You know, it's a big void because you take a group for 6-7 years on the girls and the guys side. The girls, we always had 2 age groups. So this is the age group where we're going to miss this group next year because we integrated that group. So we still got 5 or 6 players on the girls side that's been playing, you know, together. And you can see that as they play. With the boys side, we had all of our groups graduate, you know, that 2024 class. So on our top 2025 team this year, we got only 3 players that's been playing 4 or 5 years with us. The rest of the 4 or 5 has not. They come from other places. So the expectations of them understanding our culture right away, understanding our expectation, our drills, our toughness, our day-to-day getting better, they just don't have yet. And we can't, you know, expect that to happen. You know, so I'm reading articles. You know, one of my favorite coaches is Spo. From the Miami Heat. So just reading articles about year to year, he's having those great teams and not so good teams. But you treat them all the same. Like you got to get your DNA, you know, inside of them. And it takes a while, you know, to build that. But by building it, you can't tear them down by building it up. You know, you got to find a happy medium to do both. So they can feel wanted and getting to know players. So me and Max talk about the first 2 weeks. We talked about it on the podcast of understanding, you know, what the players are doing, who they are, their personalities, their parents' personalities. How can we help them? How can we do more? So losing that top group, it makes you appreciate them more, number one. But also number two, how can we hold every group to a standard that they can eventually get to that group? Even if they don't reach it, you hold them to that accountability for it.
Yeah. I think it's a learning. It's good for us too, because I think the first weekend for sure was a good wake up call on the boys' side. Just like, oh, like we weren't where we're at, where we were expected to be at, with all the little stuff like defense, culture, toughness, just like playing through no matter what you're going through, whether you're up or down. So it was good. I think it was a good wake up call for us as well, and then we can approach the guys better as we move forward here. We have a weekend off and then go back next weekend. So
yep.
Got four practices, which again doesn't seem like a lot to play on, but we'll have 2 weeks of.
I know I follow a couple coaches on Twitter, and they talk about the top programs, and you're mentioned,
yeah, you know,
in a lot of coaches when they're talking about top programs in the state and around.
Yeah, and that's the fun part for me is we're being mentioned in the breath of, you know, some of the best programs in the state. You know, Swing and Hero and you know, Halliburton and Power Five and some of these programs. So it's like for us to be only in year 7, you know, it's pretty huge with some of these programs been around for a long time, or they got, you know, an NBA tag on them. So for us to continue to do it the right way, to continue to build a program. And I always preach, it's not, you're not going to win every game. You're not going to lose every game, but the product that you show is what coaches want to see. What are you showing the coaches out there? is your effort, your toughness, your heart, your discipline, the, you know, your body language, being a good teammate, making the right passes, the one more pass, you know, the help side defense, taking charges. Are you doing all of that, or are you thinking about yourself?
Oh,
yeah. You know, right. And it's going to show.
Yeah.
I don't care what game you're watching. It's going to show which players is about them and which players is actually trying to do.
If they're coming
right
up
thing.
The floor with the ball, are they looking ahead or is their head?
Right. Looking right. Ahead? How many dribbles? And I tell the story to my U-17 team when I played overseas in Czech Republic. And every time we cross half court after two dribbles past half court, we get fined $50. So as an American who used to, when you're used to having the ball in your hand and making plays, they trying to quickly let you adapt to the European style of game where no one averages more than 14 points a game, but no one averages more less than 8. That was my team in Czech Republic. And it was a fun brand, but you got to get used to that. So you come off a pick and roll and you take three dribbles off that pick and roll, you're like, shit, that's $50. You know, so you're starting to think like, man, I got to get to the pocket pass faster. I got to make decisions. You know, I got to hedge and get off the ball. And you play games 5-on-5 in practice with just ball movement. You can't put the ball on the ground. You got to screen pass away, and you just got to keep playing fast.
I love
fast.
Playing 10 pass as a coach. Yeah. 10 pass, no dribble.
No dribble, you know. And we're trying to get to that in our program. It's the ball is a star player. We've been saying that in every practice, in every game. Let the ball be the best player. We want to show clips of our past teams and what they've done successful. And that's how you can help the next team, is just show clips of the last team. No, you're not this player or that player, but can a team be the best version of themselves by moving the ball, by sharing the ball, by thinking about the next pass, passing up good shots for great shots. The teams last year used to pass up layups for threes. They'd be underneath the rim and like, oh, I got to pass one more. And that's what we got to. The first couple weekends last year, we was telling our players, like, you guys got to shoot the ball. Like, you're passing up too many shots. That was the conversation that we were having last year. Now this year, I was like, you got to move the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just going to take time. And we got to be patient with our players. But patience doesn't mean you have to, you know, come down on what you want to do. Patience just means you got to wait, you know, and be patient for them to catch up to what you want and require for them.
One thing I do notice, I throw a plug in for you guys, is right now I think you're training – individuals is top notch with you, Max. You go down the line. I mean, I've had Mason with every one of you, and it's like, I mean, you can see the difference.
Yeah, and we got 6 trainers, and we hopefully to grab a couple more. And that was something I always wanted to do as a puzzle piece to CBA. Is you know, I want people to have as many opportunities to train as they can. And for years, it was just me training as many kids as I can. You know, with over 500 kids, just in this division, you can't catch everybody. So to have 6 trainers who are working round the clock, you know, working with athletes, it's great for these kids because they can pick up different things from different people and apply into their own game. Every workout's not the same. Every trainer's not the same. So just to see these kids taking advantage of that. And sometimes you see the same kids floating around every different trainer. And that's how you know.
Mine's one of them.
Yeah. Yours is one of them. That, you know, you got something special going because those are the kids. Because sometimes I can't go every day. But there might be something that's going on every day of the week through different trainers.
Well, here we are, another hour.
Yeah. Another hour gone.
Another one gone. I know we got some pretty good stuff coming up, too, on our podcast. So a couple good guests coming up. So like and share, and thanks, everybody, for listening.